Don't Move a Muscle, the podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. Your hosts for this podcast are me, Cassie.
And me, Joe.
We're back this week after missing last week because I was sick. Plus, we recorded the episode that went up on the 31st.
That was like a week in advance.
Yeah, so 106. So we haven't done this in a while.
We knew we were going to be gone. We didn't expect to come back and have more issues.
But yeah. But we're back, and hopefully we won't miss another week in the future. We definitely will, but but we'll try not to let it happen in the near future. But we are jumping in with Chapter 7, right? It's 7?
Yes.
Yeah, Chapter 7, The Sorting Hat, and we'll let Joe take it away with the summary.
So all the first years enter Hogwarts, guided by Professor McGonagall, and she leads them into the Great Hall, where they're sorted one at a time.
By the Sorting Hat.
By the Sorting Hat, yes. They put the Sorting Hat on the kid's head, and it announces what house they're going into. They put it on Harry's head, and he has a little conversation about it.
He talks to the hat.
Yeah, he talks to the hat. But he's put into Gryffindor, along with Ron, Hermione, Neville, Dean Thomas, etc.
Seamus Finnegan.
With Seamus Finnegan.
One of the Patels.
Lavender Brown.
Yeah. There's
Patel. Yeah. I said et cetera, so we would avoid that part.
For some reason, I'm like, oh, the only one he missed was Seamus Finnegan.
Yeah, it was just Hermione. She was the only
Although
girl.
There are too few students here, just to get that
just
out of
general,
the way. There's
yes.
like five. But go on, sorry.
So they sit down. Harry meets Nearly Headless Nick. Then Dumbledore says a couple words. Food magically appears in front of them. Harry glances over at the table of teachers, the professors, and one of them, Snape, looks back at him and he gets his scar starts to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Dumbledore says some more announcements after they eat. You know, just some casual stuff.
Yeah, like
forest is off limits.
Go here,
no magic
you die.
In court. Yeah, the forest is off limits. No magic in the corridors. Quidditch trials are next week, and you'll die a painful death if you go on the third floor corridor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, normal first day of the year announcements.
Yes. They sing a fun song to whatever tune they like and leave afterwards. Yeah, so Percy guides them to their dormitories, where they run into Peeves before they get to the dormitories, who's a poltergeist,
mm-hmm.
who throws walking sticks. He has a large collection of walking sticks he throws at Percy.
Yeah.
They go through a hole behind a painting into their dormitory, and Harry has a nightmare about Quirrell's turban talking to him.
Yeah.
That's about it.
That's the chapter. We're done. Bye.
All right, I hope you liked it. we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, let's talk about this. McGonagall appears again. We first saw her in the first chapter, but, you know, we get her in full swing in this one. She is leading the students around and doing basically all the dirty work.
Yeah.
She's the deputy headmistress, so, like, I guess that's her job, but...
Yeah, I mean, somebody has to do it.
Somebody has to do it. I like that she kind of just, like, frightens the children, too. She says, I suggest you all smarten yourselves up as much as you can while you are waiting. Her eyes lingered for a moment on Neville's cloak, which was fastened under his left ear, and on Ron's smudged nose. Harry nervously tried to flatten his hair. Mm-hmm. I love that she's, like, glaring at students, like, you're a mess. Get yourself together.
You're gonna be in front of everybody. You've got to look decent.
And teenager children in general, like, are just smelly and messy. And I love that she has absolutely no tolerance for that. Just made me laugh.
Yeah, and while they're there, they're, like, gossiping about what the test is gonna be, and Ron's got them all scared thanks to his wonderful brothers, Fred and George.
Yeah, Ron says, some sort of test, I think. Fred says it hurts a lot, but I think he was joking. Yeah, but they're all, like, freaking out about it. Hermione is, like, reciting spells that she might have to use, which, why don't they talk about the Sorting Hat in Hogwarts of History?
I feel like they should have.
Like, that Hermione hasn't read any mention of this in any of the multiple textbooks that she's committed to memory.
Yeah, I can't imagine, like, everyone in that room was surprised by what the Sorting Hat was going to be.
Yeah, I don't know. Is it, like, some kind of mystery that they all want to preserve? Like, that even Ron's parents don't tell him what's going to happen. I don't know. It's weird. But, Harry especially freaks out, or I guess we get Harry's perspective of his freaking out. So mm-hmm. we hear it firsthand, but he's worrying like, oh, I don't know any magic. How am I going to like perform a spell in this test? And maybe they'll ship me back to the Dursleys and I'll be humiliated and like all this stuff. And it just, it brought me into that horrifying headspace of trying to find a partner in high school class. I don't know. Maybe you didn't experience that because I had no friends in high school, but like that feeling of like, oh, you'll be working in groups of three for this. And then immediately like your eyes dart around and you're like, I don't know anybody. Like, what do I do? And it's horrible. It's the worst feeling in the world. And this evokes that for me.
Yeah, it's not too similar, but no, I definitely know the feeling. Just like look around. If you make eye contact with someone, you just nod and hopefully accept.
That's kind of in college because like nobody cares. But like in high school, it was always like, oh, well, everybody has friends, so they have groups.
Well, all of my friends were in like the advanced classes.
Okay, and so you did experience this too.
Yeah.
It's horrible. It's the worst. And I think later in the chapter, Harry, when he's like waiting to be called for the hat, he thinks of like, oh, being picked last in gym class, mm-hmm. which is, I think that's, yeah, that fits.
They find out it's the hat, and his first thought is like, maybe I'll have to pull a rabbit out of it.
Yeah, I like that. I like that little nod to like, oh, he doesn't know what magic is yet. Like, he doesn't know that that's not a part of it. I want to talk about Neville, though. I feel like we didn't really talk about Neville in the last chapter, which is when he was introduced. And, you know, it has kind of become our custom that every time a character is introduced, I talk about their name and sort of the etymology and everything, but we never did Neville, and I feel bad about that.
Okay, well, I hope you have a long list of name etymologies, because we were introduced to quite a few characters.
No, I think I only did Neville. I had to give him his due. He's constantly just overlooked, and he gets this episode. So Neville probably shares his first name with Neville Chamberlain. I feel like that is the most famous Neville out there.
I don't think I know who that is.
Neville Chamberlain is the former Prime Minister of England.
Okay, there's no reason I would have known who that was.
He was the Prime Minister during World War II, or early World War II, and he was famous for the appeasement policy, which is just basically like, Hitler can do what he wants, we're not gonna start something.
Ah.
Yeah. So, we'll see kind of how that pans out with Neville. It's kind of an irony that it is set up there without spoiling anything. But, Neville is sorted into the House of Courage and Bravery, so that's an interesting namesake, I guess. We don't know if that's intentional. She could have just like picked the name, but Neville Chamberlain is pretty famous. I'm surprised you don't recognize the name.
Well, if I paid more attention in history class,
maybe.
Again, I wasn't in the advanced classes.
That's not part of the advanced class.
No, I know, but there was a reason I wasn't in the advanced classes.
Okay. And his last name probably comes from or almost definitely comes from Lord of the Rings. Longbottom is a village in the Shire, and it is known for the pipeweed, Longbottom Leaf, mm-hmm. which I'm sure you recognize from the movies.
Yeah, I didn't read the book.
Well, I haven't read the books either, not fully, but Longbottom Leaf. And that's kind of all I have. But I like that association of Neville with the hobbits. I think that that's a fitting vibe. Mm-hmm. Longbottom is a funny last name, though.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he has been picked on for it and will continue to be.
Oh, yeah. For sure. So, like you said, we met a bunch of the ghosts as well. Oh, and I do have etymology about them, too. So, Peeves, I think his name is pretty clear. That's not that's not a hard one.
He's not a ghost though.
He's a poltergeist.
He's a poltergeist.
Right. Okay.
So.
The Fat Friar, I couldn't really find anything on him. The Harry Potter wiki suggests it was a pun because he's fat. The Fat Friar, like French fries put in the fryer.
Maybe.
That I felt was reaching. I don't know how I feel about that one. The Bloody Baron, that one's not hard. He's covered in blood, and a baron is like a...
Yeah, these are both very straightforward.
Yeah, well, okay, I have
Fat Friar. Right.
Okay, let me get to Sir Nicholas.
He's nearly headless.
That's not his name. His full name is Sir Nicholas de Mimsey Porpington.
Okay, but you have to understand the other ghosts definitely have names too. They didn't die as the Fat Friar and the Bloody Baron.
That was his name. Okay, well, Sir Nicholas is the one that I have actual details about. Nicholas, of course, is a name. It comes from Greek, and it means victory of the people. The Harry Potter Wiki suggests this pun for this one, and I agree with this, that Nick is also a pun on, like, oh, you nicked your neck. It's a small cut.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, I like
that's
that.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, especially because I feel like that's usually like, oh, I nicked myself shaving, and you would typically you think of, like, oh, I cut my neck shaving. I don't like thinking about that actually now. And mimsy, I think the only known usage of this word is in the poem The Jabberwocky by Lewis Carroll.
I recognize the name Jabberwocky.
It's like a nonsense poem. It uses all those weird words. I'm sure you read it. Like,
oh,
every
I'm sure.
seventh grader reads this poem. He wrote Alice in Wonderland books, Lewis Carroll.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the Jabberwocky was in them. I read them a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah, the Jabberwocky's in them.
But one of the lines in it is all mimsy were the borogroves, and somebody suggested on the internet that mimsy is a combination of flimsy and miserable, which also fits for Nearly Headless Nick. So there's a lot of fun stuff going on in Nick's name. I like that connection.
I felt so bad for him as he was, like, eating through... Harry is like, I bet that tastes good.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I haven't, like, had food in 500 years.
Yeah, which was the thing, too, I was reading about, that it doesn't line up, because we get, I forgot what it was, that, like, in some editions of the book it said, I haven't eaten in 400 years, but in the next book he celebrates his 500th death day. And so they had to change it to be consistent. And actually, that death day is where we get our first idea of the timeline of the Harry Potter series, that it's set in the 90s.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because for the most part, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter at all. So moving along, I did want to read a little bit from the Hat song, because the Hat sings to the students before they begin the sorting, kind of going over what the sorting is and what the houses mean. And it's also maybe another connection to Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings has a ton of songs in it, like, all the time.
Yeah.
So the Hat singing, I got a LOTR vibe from there. So the Hat says, "You might belong in Gryffindor, where dwell the brave at heart. Their daring, nerve, and chivalry set Gryffindors apart. You might belong in Hufflepuff, where they are just and loyal. Those patient Hufflepuffs are true and unafraid of toil. Or yet in wise old Ravenclaw, if you've a ready mind, where those of wit and learning will always find their kind. Or perhaps in Slytherin, you'll make your real friends. Those cunning folk use any means to achieve their ends." I dug that. I just thought it was important to kind of establish the houses and share that.
Yeah, it's a nice, like, quick way to introduce everything.
Yeah, I think that's why Tolkien gets it, although he doesn't do it in a quick manner.
No, but he doesn't do a lot of things too quick.
Yeah, so they have the temporary relief of, oh, we just have to put a hat on. But Harry, there's an interesting little quote here. Harry didn't feel brave or quick-witted or any of it at the moment. If only the Hat had mentioned a house for people who felt a bit queasy, that would have been the one for him. Now, I pick out this quote because I think it's a cute one. It's an important one. And I used it on a test once. I took a philosophy of Harry Potter class in community college. And one of the big things that we talked about was it was just like an intro to philosophy class, was the difference between absolutism and existentialism. So absolutism, or sometimes it's known as essentialism, believes that there's an essential essence to every person. And usually we conceptualize that in terms of a soul, but there's an essential being to you that cannot be changed. Whereas existentialism believes that, like, anything can be anything in that moment. A chair is sometimes something you sit on, but when you're standing on it, it becomes a stepladder. And its essence is not set. A chair isn't just a chair.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I use this on a test as evidence of essentialism in the Harry Potter books, that even though Harry feels queasy and perhaps not brave in the moment, he's still sorted into Gryffindor because the Hat can see in his essential being that he is brave and courageous and all those other traits that Gryffindors have.
Okay, true.
So I thought that was something important to bring up, because that kind of gets at what the Hat is, that the Hat is able to read who a person is, not necessarily how they might seem or act. And that explains some of the maybe baffling sortings that the Hat does, putting Neville in Gryffindor, putting Hermione in Gryffindor, when for all intents and purposes, from what we know of her so far, she should be in Ravenclaw.
Mm-hmm.
So the Hat's kind of playing a long game here. The Hat's able to see the person and kind of their trajectory. And Harry makes a choice he sits there and he's thinking, like, I don't want to be in Slytherin, not Slytherin, please, not Slytherin. And the hat is, in a way, kind of tempting him and saying, like, well, you could be great in Slytherin, you know, think of all the power that it would give you, the connections and everything like that. And Harry sticks to that not Slytherin deal. And so in a way, you know, it's an interesting thing that, you know, Harry has the bravery to ask the hat for something. And, of course, he's showing what he values, that, you know, it's not power and richness and whatever that is associated with Slytherin. It's nobility. So, again, returning to that theme of nobility that we've been bringing up.
Yeah. And he's not giving in to that temptation. That
exactly.
Hat is giving him. Yeah.
Yeah. Not to say that the hat is like a stand in for Satan or anything like that. It's just I do think, though, it is kind of a Garden of Eden scene there, or a reversal on the Garden of Eden theme. The snake offers Eve knowledge, power, whatever, and she accepts it. She eats the fruit, but Harry turns it down.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And in a way, you know, you could flip that on its side and say that it's kind of a self-completing prophecy, that Neville thinks, oh, well, the hat put me in Gryffindor for a reason, so I must be brave and courageous. And in a way, kind of manufactures his own bravery, but I think it's more intended as a hat. The hat is able to see into a person's soul, and souls actually do exist in the Harry Potter universe. So
yeah, because they've got the ghosts. So
well, they're in book three, souls.
Yes, they just yeah.
Yeah, the ghosts but are from not what the we only know now.
The ghosts are our current evidence of souls.
Yes, yeah. So that's my little musing on the hat scene and the Harry not Slytherin scene. I don't know if you have anything more to say about it.
No, I don't really have much till he sits down.
Okay. And it does become kind of a question that plagues Harry. So this isn't the last time that we're going to talk about this scene.
No,
Harry constantly, you know, questions, you know, his role as a Gryffindor and who he is. And it's an interesting thing that I think runs throughout the series. But, you know, Harry is ultimately sorted into Gryffindor.
Yep. That is a final decision that he cannot take back. Despite the dream he has at the end of the chapter.
Yeah.
of a turban yelling at him to switch houses.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's kind of funny, too, that going back to our discussion, of course, the house is judging them on who they are as a being. But it's kind of funny that this moment as an 11-year-old, like, decides their next 7 years of schooling in a way. I mean, it's kind of just a group that they're placed in, but
yeah. And it's good that there's no actual test to do this. There's no decision that goes into it. It's just like this magical being is deciding where they're going to based on who they are internally, maybe who they could be.
Yeah.
Because the hat's definitely not just looking at these 11-year-olds and saying, based on what you are right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's definitely some different choices would be made.
Yeah.
So the sorting proceeds. Ron groans when Hermione is sorted into Gryffindor, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah.
Because Ron, I mean, he kind of knows where he's going. His entire family has been in Gryffindor. So, yeah, but just a groan.
Yeah, from in the line. It's not even like he's definitely there already. Like, basically he is. Yeah, but
it's a groan. I loved that. Neville falls on his way to the stool, which was so sad to me. Like, just how...
And then he runs away with the hat on.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is covering his eyes, so I'm surprised he didn't fall again.
I know. It's like, all he needs to do is, like, fall over and fart, and Neville will officially be, like, the, oh man, don't you feel sorry for this pathetic person?
Yeah.
It's just, it's so sad sometimes how they treat him. Harry does pick up on the fact that Quirrell is wearing a turban now.
Was he not wearing one before? It's not mentioned that
it's not mentioned
one.
That he is or isn't when Harry runs into him in the Leaky Cauldron. But the fact that he picks up on it now and the way it's written, it kind of indicates that Quirrell wasn't wearing the turban previously. I thought that was a little weird. It must be intentional, just the way that it's written. It was very blatant that, like, oh, Harry's like, hey, what's up with the turban? Like,
maybe
I met
it was
you
just
before
like a
weren't.
Bigger, like he's saying it's a big purple turban now.
I don't know.
So it could have just been like a regular turban before. Now it's obnoxiously sized.
I don't know. I'm going to have to look a little bit closer at that, but it definitely was interesting. And I thought this was real cute. Harry crosses his fingers under the table when Ron is being sorted.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was sweet. That got me.
Yeah. So they sit down and Dumbledore stands up and says a few words, four specifically. Nitwit, blubber, oddment, tweak. Thank you.
There's nothing to be made of those words. They're just nonsense random words.
But right after he says that, Harry asks Percy if he's mad.
Yeah.
Percy says, mad? He's a genius. Best wizard in the world. But he is a bit mad, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like kind of par for the course in the wizarding world. Like, oh yeah, they're brilliant, but yeah, we're insane. Like, this, we're okay with this. But yeah, when they sit down too, and all the food appears, Harry is like, oh my god, look at all this amazing food that I can now eat because he's been malnourished all his life. It says Dudley had always taken anything that Harry really wanted, even if it made him sick, which is horrible. Like, what a little demon child that Dudley is to do that.
And there's a couple ways to look at that, because it could have been, oh, Harry wants this, so I have to eat it. Or it could have just been like, I still, for some reason, don't know when I'm going to be full. Oh, so I'm just going to keep eating because it's still there.
Which probably explains Dudley's physical size. Appearance. Yes. Although that was like my gut reaction to be like, oh, Dudley, what a little jerk to do that. But then I was reminded of the garlic bread that I would eat as a child. So it's time for a little personal anecdote. As children, my mom would make me and my siblings garlic bread with some of our meals. And as I'm sure our listeners know, garlic bread is the best. So good. So we would have, you know, a bowl of garlic bread to pick from. And me and my sister quickly realized the faster we eat the garlic bread, the more garlic bread we get. Because, you know, if I can eat half the bowl, then everybody else gets to pick from the other half and I get the bowl. So we would wolf down the garlic bread with the intention of depriving one of my other siblings from it, which is horrible. So I already feel like a hypocrite. And it got to the point where my mom would have to count how many pieces of garlic bread that she was cutting up and divide it by three so that each of us got an equal amount of garlic bread. But so there's a little bit of Dudley in my past. And I love garlic bread. That's all I have to say for myself.
Garlic bread is delicious.
Yeah, but they've got like roast chicken, roast pork, all kinds of potatoes and stuff. Harry ate well that night.
Yeah. Plus there is some peppermint humbugs on this dinner table.
I do not know what those are.
They're pretty much just mints. They're hard-boiled sweets, typically black and white striped. This is the second time they're brought up, apparently.
That sounds disgusting. Why would you eat that with, like, chicken?
I don't know. It might just be, like, if you're having a conversation, like, popping in your mouth, so you're not, like, breathing
chicken fumes at
Yeah,
somewhere?
I don't know.
Garlic bread fumes.
So, it's mentioned before this in Chapter 5, when Harry goes through Hagrid's coat to pay the owl.
Okay.
He mentions that there are these peppermint humbugs in them.
Hagrid's definitely stealing food, like, from the table to eat later.
That's very possible. The other option could be that it was just, like, Hagrid really likes these, so let's put them on the table.
He requested them for dinner.
He requested specifically.
Yeah, I like that.
Either way works. Just Hagrid stuffing a bunch of these in his many coat pockets.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure he was wearing that same coat to dinner.
I mean, they're not mutually exclusive. Like, it could be, oh, Hagrid likes peppermint humbugs, so let's put peppermint humbugs on the table. And Hagrid likes peppermint humbugs, so he's going to steal a bunch for himself for later.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. So the kids get talking, and Neville reveals that he was raised by his grandmother, which is significant. That Neville's parents are absent, shall we say?
Yeah, he doesn't specify
why, which makes sense.
What happened? but he goes into how his family, which we can assume are all wizards, because he only specifies his grandma.
Yeah.
But the rest of his family is like, oh man, I hope he has magic powers. And his great uncle starts doing terrible things to him, hoping to spring out some magic.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he mentions how old he is at the time, but he's hung out of a window by his ankles and then dropped by his presumably drunk great uncle because he was offered some food.
Yes.
Luckily,
this is normal parenting.
Oh, yeah. Luckily, he did bounce. He bounced down the road.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's a terrible little story that he tells.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's great in retrospect, but looking at that as an older person, I'm horrified.
But it also makes you think about the wizarding community, because
yeah, that's true.
Like, yeah, you hear all the Muggle families were so excited to find out they had
magical children. Then the magic parents are like, oh my god, what if our parents aren't magic, our children aren't magic.
Yeah, his grandma cried because she was so happy that he actually showed some magic power,
and that there's like anxiety over it for this poor kid.
Yeah,
that like, when Neville's a real dummy, he might not be magical. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, it's awful.
Neville might be a dud.
Yeah. Again, Neville is just really put through the ringer in this chapter and in every chapter. Poor Neville. There's a great quote from Hermione, just to, again, continue our list of nerdy things that Hermione does. She's sitting there talking to Percy, excited about lessons starting. And she says, "I do hope they start right away. There's so much to learn. I'm particularly interested in transfiguration, you know, turning something into something else. Of course, it's supposed to be very difficult." And that's all one sentence again. And it has that like, "Oh, I do hope they start right away." Renny is such a dork. I love her.
But we find out Percy is also such a dork because he is happy to go on
with this like 11-year-old talking about like how excited they are about school.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always felt that Percy and Hermione should have more of a relationship than they do in the books. Like, not like a relationship, but like, I don't know. I feel like they have very similar vibes, at least early on in the books.
Yeah, kind of.
They both, like, basically act as hall monitors a lot. And, like, they love school and they're super nerdy. And I don't know. I always felt that those two characters should interact more.
They definitely would have gotten along.
Oh, for sure. And then, like Joe says in his summary, that we are introduced to Snape, who is a major character in the books and who we've already mentioned in a past chapter. But Percy actually says about Snape.
Did we?
Yeah, I think I said some bad things about Snape because I don't like him. It was very brief.
Okay, I don't remember his name being mentioned.
It wasn't mentioned in the books.
Okay, then that's fine.
I think we were talking about child abuse, and so I brought up Snape, so...
Yeah.
But Percy says he teaches potions, but he doesn't want to. Everyone knows he's after Quirrell's job. Knows an awful lot about the dark arts, Snape. Which is a messed up thing for students to know about their teacher. Mm-hmm. And just, Snape is not a good guy.
So Harry notices him talking to Quirrell, and Snape then notices Harry, looks right at him, and Harry's scar hurts. And I think this is the first time it's mentioned that Harry's scar hurts.
Yeah, that's true. The scar basically acts as like a fire alarm a little bit for danger.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, so whenever Harry's scar hurts, we know that something is up, and something is for sure up with Snape. Perhaps we will learn about him in the next chapter, The Potions Master. These chapter titles are in the first book. I don't know about them.
They're
very
self-explanatory.
Clear. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then the kids go on to sing the Hogwarts school song, which Dumbledore basically says, like, "Hey, you know the words, sing it however you want."
And not even you know the words, but here are the words. He had like ribbon spelling out the words.
Okay. Yeah.
Pick whatever tune you want. And of course the Weasley twins choose a funeral march.
Yeah.
So they finish a lot later than everyone else.
Yeah. And there's a quote here. Dumbledore conducted the last few lines with his wand, and when they had finished, as in the Weasley twins had finished, he was one of those who clapped loudest, which is great for Dumbledore. I love Dumbledore in this chapter, but it just made me think. I was recently reading a thread on the Harry Potter subreddit about Michael Gambon, who was the actor who replaced Richard Harris as playing Dumbledore in the movies.
Okay.
And how people don't like his take on the character, and there's that one scene that everybody complains about in movie 4. So when we talk about the movies, I'm sure we'll get to that scene, and we'll talk about that scene, and we'll talk about the actor switch. But one person posted saying that Dumbledore in the books has just this whimsical, mystical quality that the movies just completely lose out on, either actor. They fail to kind of capture that. And I think that they both did a good job. I'm not knocking their performance. I like Michael Gambon as Dumbledore. But I think that's true, and I really felt that in this scene here. Of just the fun that Dumbledore has with the students, and that he's humored by the Weasley twins, who are frankly like a little obnoxious sometimes and like looking for attention. But Dumbledore is just he likes it. He laughs at it. He appreciates it. He claps the loudest for them.
Mm-hmm. And then he even says afterwards, like not even specifically to the Weasley twins, but like, so he said, pick your tune. So every single kid may have sang something completely different just with the same words.
Yeah.
So it must have been chaos in there. And he just goes, "Ah, music. A magic beyond all we do here."
Yeah. And all the teachers are just like forced smile, like, we just need to get through this. Like, we do it once a year. Like, just get me through this. But Dumbledore loves it. And, like, how many of these must he have sat through as both, like, a headmaster and a professor and then as a student? And he loves it. Mm-hmm. And it just got me thinking about the character of Dumbledore and how I don't think that either of the actors really capture that, or even the movies in general might have just failed to kind of capture that.
Yeah, they took out a lot of the scenes where that could have really been shown.
Yeah, and you know,
we'll get into that.
Yeah, we'll talk about the movies more in depth. But actually, I learned an interesting bit of trivia in reading that thread that after Richard Harris passed away, you know, they had to cast the new Dumbledore, and they offered the job to Ian McKellen, who plays Gandalf in The Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And Ian McKellen turned down the role, not because he's like, oh, I just got off from playing Gandalf, so, you know, I'm not going
to
do that.
I need to be another old wizard.
No, it wasn't that. It was that Richard Harris, the first Dumbledore, hated Ian McKellen. And it's actually not that funny, because it was apparently like homophobic reasons, because Ian McKellen is gay.
Yeah.
But no, it is still kind of funny. He turned it down just as like out of respect for Richard Harris and his career and, you know, his recent death. I'm not going to take the role. I'm not going to replace him. But Ian McKellen would have been good Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very happy with the Dumbledore.
Yeah. I like Michael Gambon. People need to stop attacking Michael Gambon.
I will admit, for a very long time, I thought
it was the same guy.
It was the same guy. Yeah. Not that the old Dumbledore was the new Dumbledore. I thought that... What's the guy's name?
Ian McKellen?
Yeah, I thought it was him both times. As
Gandalf and Gandalf Dumbledore?
Gandalf and okay. Dumbledore. I of thought course he was you did. By the same actor.
Yeah, old white men.
They look pretty similar.
Yeah. They run into Peeves on the way to the dormitories. So they leave the Great Hall and head up to the Gryffindor Common Room. But on the way, they run into Peeves, the poltergeist, as Joe is so excited to mention. Peeve says, "Ickle firsties, what fun," which is the, I think, second time that Rowling uses the word ickle. The first being, what is it? Ickle diddy duddykins?
Ickle diddy duddy dums.
Whatever it was. So I guess she likes that word.
It might be a British thing.
I think it's a British thing. I kind of thought that it might be like how we say like whittle.
I don't say that.
How some people say whittle and just like use baby talk to kind of infantilize someone.
I guess.
I don't know. Maybe our English fans can correct us on that. I found Peeves really funny as a kid, but I don't know how he's going to hold up on this read through. Because beating them with walking sticks like this, mean.
I read through this pretty recently and yeah. I didn't have too much of a problem with Peeves. Okay. He wasn't really meant to be funny. It was more of this is a problem.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I remember liking Peeves as a kid and being pretty into Peeves.
You were an awful kid. So.
I wasn't an awful kid. I just really like garlic bread. And Percy takes him to the Gryffindor Common Room. The password is Caput Draconis, which means dragon's head. Another weird dragon thing with these books.
Yeah, more dragons.
And then there's that weird dream that Harry has where Quirrell's turban talks to him and stuff. And I feel like we shouldn't talk about it because any, like, even a surface level dissection of this scene is going to reveal some huge spoilers because this is, like, some super heavy handed foreshadowing.
Yeah, I actually can't wait to talk about a bunch of stuff at the very end of this. Like, the very last, or not the very last chapter, but as soon as this is revealed, we've got a lot to, like, backtrack.
Yeah. Maybe we should do an episode, like, at the end of the book, just like a Philosopher's Stone wrap up and then go into Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, we'll think about that. And that's kind of the chapter.
So the spell of the week, I chose Spongify, which is a softening charm. It makes an object rubbery and bouncy. So if you can't guess why I chose it, it's both because, again, no spells were really used, but Neville is dropped out of a window and bounces around. So obviously he didn't know the spell as a child.
It was probably what he...
Yeah, it's what basically happened. Yeah, so I'm not sure exactly how that works when you're a child wizard. Child, magical child. Because you use the magic uncontrollably, but is it restricted to magic that has spells, or could you just kind of do
The nature of just spells in general is kind of, I don't know if we learned too much about that. Maybe there's some stuff on Pottermore that I can look up, but we do hear definitely majorly in book 6 about a character inventing a spell.
Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine how you would do that.
Do you have
the outcome in mind, or do you say words at a wall for a while and wait for something to happen?
I'm not sure about that. We're going to have to look that up. We'll talk about that when we get to book 6.
Yes. We won't mention it at all until then.
Alrighty. So before we close out, we do have an email to read and an iTunes review.
Why would we read the iTunes review?
Because they're nice. And we only have one, and I want to encourage people to do more. So so first we'll go to the email. This email
comes... Are there any questions in the iTunes review?
No, just let
me...
Let me say thank you to this person.
You can say thank you. You don't need to read their review.
Okay. The first is the email, which comes from our friend. Well, he signs it our French listener. So I'm not sure if he's okay with us using our name. So I'm going to err on the side of caution and just say this is our favorite French listener of Potrificus Totalis. Send us an email. He says, hey, Potrificus, French listener here. First of all, I wanted to say that I love what you both do. I love the concept. You're very interesting and bring very much to the story. Moreover, you both have great voices, which is kind of nice in a podcast. You make my evenings magical. That's so sweet.
Thank you.
Next, I wanted to put my two cents in the French origin of the word Gringotts. So you said it was coming from the word gringo, if I understand. To be clear, let me double check my notes from last week. I don't know if I was pronouncing the word right, but... The Ultimate Unofficial Guide to the Mysteries of Harry Potter said it came from the French word spelled G-R-I-N-G-O-U. But in reference to that, the email says, so you said it was coming from the word gringo, if I understand. It is this. The pronunciation is gringo, and unfortunately, I don't think that a gringo is a skinflint person, although it would match with Gringotts. The word gringo has a Hispanic origin and means a stranger. Maybe there is an alternate definition to this word, but I don't seem to find one matching with a miser or a skinflint. This is actually really interesting because I read this, of course, from the Ultimate Official Guide to the Mysteries of Harry Potter and assumed that anything that was printed in a book had to be true. So I just read this aloud on the podcast. But after reading this email, I did some research, and the only reference to this being a French word that I can find goes back to this book.
Whoa, okay.
So I have no idea where Galadriel pulled this from. But yeah, the email is right. It does not seem to be a French word. Of course, there is that origin, the Hispanic origin that he mentions of gringo, which, I mean, it could be connected. I don't really know. I don't see a connection there, but whatever. but yeah, so we're sorry for making that mistake.
Maybe we'll double check our sources.
No, I can't imagine where that would come from. Like, oh, because the interesting thing is that Galadriel doesn't go into the etymology for everything. So when it seems like it's just like, oh, J.K. Rowling made up this word, it's just, it's left at that. But to specifically mention this with Gringotts and to say this is a French word, like, where did they get that from?
I have no idea.
I'm going to track down Galadriel one of these days and ask her, why'd you make me look a fool on my podcast?
How long ago did she write this?
It came out in 2004.
Okay. This was finding her.
Yeah, we'll find her. Yeah, so thank you for the correction and for the email in general, but definitely thank you for the correction. I feel real bad about that, but yeah, we'll try to be more careful in the future. and he continues, nevertheless, thank you for your great work. I hope it will continue further. I would love that you get to the end of the series. We would love that, too. It's going to happen.
That's very optimistic.
And he says,
I'd like to.
We're going to. And he says, P.S. Thank you for mentioning me in your last podcast. That was nice. Yeah. So on that note, I'm going to read the iTunes review.
No, there's no. Don't make this person feel bad.
I'm not
going to
make her feel bad. I'm saying thank you. Fine. I won't read the iTunes review, but I will say thank you to Kimmy3790 for leaving us an iTunes review.
What if she doesn't want to be looked up?
It's public.
What if she doesn't want to be looked up?
It's a public review. So thank you for leaving the iTunes review. And of course, all our listeners are invited / encouraged to do so as well. But you don't have to.
More encouraged than invited.
So that kind of wraps us up for this week. You can find Podtrificus Totalis on all of the podcast services, iTunes, Pocket Casts, whatever the heck you use, we're on there.
It's a bad word.
It's not a bad word. and we are also on YouTube, so you can listen to our episodes on there. I don't think that 106 is on there right now, actually, because I was sick. But we'll get them on there. It takes a long time for me to make those videos. Or not for me to make them, because it's just a still image, but for them to, like, process and upload and all that junk. But we do put the episodes on YouTube, so you can listen to them from there. It's just usually delayed a little bit. We do have the social media, so Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr. You can find us on there. Just search Podtrificus on Twitter or Podtrificus Totalis on any of that other stuff. Or just follow the links on our website, PodtrificusTotalis.com. You can send us an email, owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com, which you can also do through our website. But send us an email with your thoughts, your questions, your corrections, apparently.
Oh yeah, always corrections.
Please correct us.
Will be more.
Yeah, we're not so smart. Yeah, so send us an email, talk to us, give us advice on our life in this podcast, and join us for chapter 8,
The Potions Master.